This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora, this is MS Momentum. My name is Katie Burns and I'm the Community Connector for MS Otago. MS Momentum is our monthly podcast on ORFM to talk about all things related to MS across Otago. Today I am talking again with Tilly Lassman, who is a local social worker who has done some research in the field of people having an experience of having a parent or caregiver with MS. So this is part two of a two-part series. So if you haven't yet listened to the first part, then I'd really encourage you to head online to orfm.co.nz and find the MS Momentum podcast, find part one, and then come back and listen to this one. So thank you, Tilly, for joining me again today.
Thank you for having me back.
Awesome. So last time we talked a little bit about your research, and we talked a bit about the group that has just started for MS Otago. So this is a group specifically for children and youth who have a parent or caregiver with MS or another neurological condition, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. So for this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit more about the actual research in terms of both what's out there and what you've done. Mm. And yeah, those two different, how they intertwine together.
Yeah.
So the first question I'm just going to ask you about today is, what other research did you find like while you were preparing to do your own research?
Absolutely. So I've done now two literature reviews on sort of a broad look at the impacts of being a child of a chronically ill caregiver. And so I wasn't looking at MS specifically, but interestingly, a lot of the research that's out there does center around MS. There's also quite a bit of research around some other neurological conditions and things like cancer. But what I found in the research was surprisingly little. And that's what sort of triggered to me, oh, this is worth looking at. Because initially I thought, as mentioned in the last episode, I thought maybe this is all in my head, you know, maybe this is because I was the child of a chronically ill caregiver and I'm just having an experience and I think it's noteworthy. Turns out the research agrees, so that was validating. But what I found was in the very small pocket of research, within a broader category, there's a lot of research around children of parents who are struggling with their mental health, which is undeniably an important area to research and support. But there's not a lot written on children of parents with a physical chronic illness. So we're talking things like diabetes, Crohn's, lupus, multiple sclerosis, perhaps being disabled in some other capacity. There's just not a lot out there on how it impacts. But what is out there shows that you do see for children who have a chronically ill parent or caregiver, increased numbers of feeling overwhelmed or emotional and behavioral struggles in school. And that really stood out to me because if you're having struggles in school, but the school doesn't know that your parent has a physical chronic illness, there's a gap there that often the children are left to fill. And that, again, that feels really unfair to me that children should have to bridge this gap that adults could be talking about to then support the child. Mm. Beyond that, one of the biggest standout things for me is that in social work specifically, there is no model of support. There's a lot in social work about how do we work with families, how do we support children and their well-being and their safety and their development. But there's nothing about this. But the research does show statistically that children have increased risk of things like, as mentioned before, things like eczema or anxiety, depression, and other physical manifestations of anxiety and depression. So, you know, the research is clear. There are risks, but we're not doing a good enough job in social work, in my opinion, of addressing those risk factors.
Mm, yeah, and I think it's very interesting because you hear a lot about parents who maybe have a chronically ill child,
mm-hmm.
or yeah. the spouse mm-hmm. of a person who is chronically ill.
Good point.
And, you know, I guess those other kind of factors, which of course come into play and are of course important, but it does seem to me that in the case of kind of chronically ill people, children and youth do seem to be, unfortunately, quite often left out of the conversation.
Yeah.
A lot of it is focused around the person who is sick and potentially their partner and maybe some of the wider family stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, kind of flatlines after that.
It does. And,
yeah.
And what we're learning now, which I think is so important, and actually some research has come out from the Christchurch earthquakes about infants who experience trauma. And we might think as adults in our current sort of paradigm, we think they were so young, they didn't remember anything. We're learning that that's not true, that trauma can impact the brain from, you know, before birth even. And I'm not saying this to put fear into the hearts of people, but rather to say, let's pay attention. Let's just acknowledge that children are like sponges. Like they're these gorgeous sponges who just soak up what they see and hear and monkey see, monkey do. We've got mirror neurons, so we react to people and we try to emulate what they do. And if we're experiencing something really confusing to a little mind, such as my parent is sick, I don't know what that means, how long are they going to be here, how is this going to change my relationship with them, they don't have the language for that yet, but it's impacting them. So I think, you know, with emerging research that's coming out around learning that children are susceptible to a lot more than we realized previously, we need to also be addressing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if anyone listening has ever looked into the first 1,000 days research. Like it's fascinating in terms of like of all that stuff. Of like, yes, they can't sit down and when they're 19 and be like, yeah, I remember all these things, but it like imprints on them and on their ability, on how they develop. And
yeah,
it can be the small like smell and sound and like these little things that kind of trigger these memories that they don't actually remember, but they remember the feeling associated with that memory. Yeah,
it's somewhere in their body, their subconscious. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know the language to go further in that, but it does have an impact, and I think that we as professionals can't overlook that any longer.
Yeah, absolutely. And what are some of the things? I mean, you kind of talked about what you found in the research. What are some of the things that were missing in the research? So, you know, there was a lot of quantitative stuff.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll try not to get too nerdy about it, but quantitative research is I always mix these up. Quantitative, I think of counting. So quantitative is looking at the numbers of people who have certain experiences and developing statistics. Qualitative research, on the other hand, is looking more at things like experiences, collecting stories. And that's kind of the realm that I like to sit in. And what's missing in the research, other than a model for practice for social workers or counselors working with families where there's chronic illness in the parents, what's really missing is qualitative data. So what I think is the most pressing thing that's missing is actually talking to kids. It blows my mind why we don't have research that actually has captured the voices of children living in these situations. And so that's what my research started to try to go towards. I wasn't yet working with any children in my practice at that point. So I leaned on talking to adults who could reflect on the experience of having a parent with chronic illness when they were a child. And so still, even with, you know, what I've contributed, there's a big gap. And that's sort of what our group is intending to fill, is to start learning from young people, to start saying, you've got a story to tell and we've got gaps in our awareness, and that you can fill the gap.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think that's so important. And that's like, and I think I'm sure we talked about this last time as well, that real important difference between reflecting back on a situation that's happened in the past. Obviously that adult is still a person who has a parent with MS and currently, but they're reflecting back on their experiences as a child. But to hear the voices of the children and youth as it's happening is that's such a really different experience, really.
It is. And it's I spoke last time quite a bit about language, and I think that's important because I have my language is really different than it would have been when I was 16. And I think it's important to hear what a 16-year-old has to say, and a 14, 12, 11, so on, like every age range through development. I would love to hear people's experiences because I don't know what they are yet. And I imagine that there will be crossover of similarity of experiences for people, but also individual stories of resilience and strength that just absolutely astound us. I think that there's a lot of almost like little nuggets of gold just waiting to be found through actually asking children, what's this like for you? Or just giving them space to tell you if they want to.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just going to take a super quick ad break and we'll be right back.
MS Otago aims to empower people with multiple sclerosis and their support networks by providing them with information and skills to participate actively in the community in ways that are meaningful to them. You can find us at Dunedin Community House and online at msotago.org.nz, or you can give us a call on 027 889 9035. MS Otago, working for the people of Otago.
If you are just joining us, this is MS Momentum. My name is Katie Burns. I'm the Community Connector for MS Otago. Today I am talking with Tilly Lassman, who is a local social worker who has been doing some research in the area of working with children and youth who have a parent with a chronic illness. And so this is part two of a two-part series. So if you want to go back and listen to the first part, jump onto the ORFM website and just search up MS Momentum. You'll find the first part of the podcast on there. And then come back and listen to this one, of course. And so, Tilly, before the break, we were talking about kind of what other research was out there and what some of the gaps of that research were. For example, there's a lot of quantitative or statistical research, but not a lot of qualitative, like really good stories and things like that in the research that you found. So how did, I guess, that, like knowing what's out there and what's missing, how did that shape your research when you started looking into what you wanted to do?
That's a good question, because I suspected, and I love when research proves you wrong, and that's what happened to me. I suspected that I was going to speak with adults reflecting on their experience of childhood with a chronically ill parent, and they were going to be very sad stories. And that I suspected they were going to be full of angst and trauma, and I was prepared to offer therapeutic support in those spaces. And I was proven wrong. What I actually learned, and this directly fills that gap we were just talking about. What I learned were stories, or what I was told were stories of community, resilience, connection, development of healing strategies that children came up with, adults reflecting on their childhood. But I guess what I learned was that having a parent with a chronic illness doesn't inherently have to be a negative thing. For example, a couple of the people I interviewed talked about how when they were feeling overwhelmed with a particular situation with their parent who had MS or another chronic illness, they would turn to something themselves to self-soothe. So that might have been a book they really loved, or a TV show, or going into nature. These are all examples from the work I've recently done where people talked about their own ways of mediating what's going on. In narrative therapy, Michael White, who's the founder of narrative therapy, says no one is a passive recipient of trauma. And I want to say that one more time because it's really important. No one is a passive recipient of trauma. That means that we all have our ways of dealing with it. We might not even realize it's happening. For example, if your child's feeling really overwhelmed and storms off to their bedroom, maybe you don't know what they're doing in there. You're giving them their space and their privacy. But you might be surprised to find that they're actually, reading a really great book or watching a TV series, or they found a TikTok channel that really appeals to them, and they're building community without realizing it. They're building senses of self. What I found is sort of the outcomes of some of this research was not negative at all. It was actually really powerful and really beautiful, saying this hard thing was happening and here's how I managed, and now I've got this character trait that builds into adulthood that I might not have had otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's like really that's resilience, what you're talking about mm-hmm. there, right? Like,
absolutely.
As in we all kind of self-soothe to mm-hmm. a point mm-hmm. With different things, and the things that we choose to self-soothe with can have positive or negative outcomes, mm-hmm. unfortunately or fortunately. Mm. But really that's what resilience is that this hard thing is happening and this is how I'm moving through this hard thing.
Yeah.
Rather than being stuck
yes.
in the hard thing.
Yeah. There was a teensy little fraction of the research that did speak about, and when I say the research, I mean multiple different articles that spoke about the positive side of having a parent with a chronic condition. And that can look like, and I noticed this as well, huge capacities for empathy. A couple of the people I spoke with said that their relationship with people with disabilities as adults is different because of their awareness that came from their parent. So they might hold a door open, or they might vote a certain way, or they might speak to someone a little bit differently or with a bit more kindness because they know what it's like to live next to disability, and seeing that that life is shaped a little bit differently for people who struggle in any capacity, and that they, with that awareness, they can make the world a little bit of a better place with it. And I just thought, wow, there's not a lot of talk about that. You know, it's so easy to talk about this subject and feel completely overwhelmed. But there's this other side to it that I want to try to raise the volume on, that is actually there can be some really beautiful outcomes from this.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think that's really, really important because you know, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, no one wants a chronic illness. Mm-hmm. Like no one wakes up in the morning like, oh, I really hope I'm diagnosed with a chronic illness today, right? Unfortunately, it happens. But that doesn't have to be an inherently negative thing. Mm-hmm. There can be positives that come out of that. Mm. And like what you're saying, like not just for yourself but for your children, you know, like I'm a parent. I get it. You want the best for your kids, right?
Mm.
And you don't want whatever's happening with you to impact on your children.
Mm-hmm.
It does, because that's life and that's reality.
Mm.
But knowing that some of that, at least some of that impact can be a positive thing for them, and that they can grow up with that.
Mm.
But I think that's such a powerful kind of message to put out there.
Absolutely.
To parents.
Yeah, because it doesn't, I want to stress again what we talked about last time, which was around the reality of the situation. Like, it is just the reality that people are plopped into, but it doesn't have to be an upsetting one per se. It has upsetting factors. But I guess what's important in this work is looking at all the different angles of the situation, right? Looking at, you know, the parent's abilities and changing abilities, but the child's abilities and changing abilities, because they're growing up next to MS. And so they're learning about, whether they know it or not, they are learning about changing cognition and fatigue and relapses and so on. They're learning a lot without realizing it, perhaps. Like I said, they're these amazing sponges that are soaking up what's going on around them. And so what comes next in the work that you and I are going to do together in this group is, how do we help make sure the stories getting told are the ones of strength and resilience and connection? Because it can go in a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where it's the job of professionals to come in and help guide the stories that are going to be told about these young people's lives and these families' lives.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And but again, that's a balance, right? Like sometimes things are hard and we need to acknowledge that things are hard.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't mean that hardness is all it is.
That's exactly it. It's multifaceted.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess on that thought of what is, I guess, one thing or one series of things that you might want parents or caregivers who are listening to this, to us talk about this, to take away from this conversation?
I want you to take away that your kids are incredible. Your kids are going through possibly more than you know. And again, that's not your fault. I also want you to take away that parent blaming has no place in this conversation. Like, absolutely. I'm thinking of myself as like a security guard outside saying parent blame is not welcome in the door. Those are the two things that your kids, that you might be going through a really hard time. I mean, when you're unsure about what's going on with your parents' health, it can do a lot to your feelings of safety and security. So things like acting out at school or, you know, being disrespectful at home can happen. And so I don't want to say that it's going to be all rainbows and butterflies. Like, hard stuff happens in any family. And when you introduce this additional factor, it just compounds the challenges. But your kids are doing things that you might not see that might really impress you if you got to see them. So if you got to see what was going on when they go to school, and maybe there's a kid in their class who's struggling in any capacity, might be disability, might be learning, doesn't matter. But you might not know that your child is actually being particularly kind to them. And your child might not know that they're being particularly kind to them because of their experience at home. So I guess what I want to say is, if there's a gentle way to like peel back the veil and hold space for your child's capacity for empathy, I think that's huge, because you might be really amazed at how wonderful they are with, as a result of something that you didn't want, that you don't like, but is part of your reality.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that's such a – I love the way you look at this, Philly, because it's such a beautiful way of looking at it. And I do – I can't help but wonder – if there is such little research out there about this, because it's not a conversation that people want to have, or it's not the nice stuff, or it's not, kind of the warm fuzzies necessarily.
It's very uncomfortable. And yeah. It's extremely vulnerable. I mean, I wasn't able to talk about this until MS was out of my life for about 8 or 9 years. So I'm the first to put my hand up and say, I get it if this isn't for you. It's very uncomfortable. But again, you know, we've talked about this a couple times. It is the reality. Mm-hmm. And not talking about it doesn't make it go away, especially for your child. Not talking about it might be quite isolating for them. That said, it might not always be the parents' job to have to talk about it. If they're uncomfortable or it's too vulnerable for them, that's why organizations like MSNZ and MS Otago are here to help bridge that gap, so that there can be some understanding around a situation that is really hard, but it's not impossible.
Perfect. We are unfortunately out of time, but thank you so much again, Tilly, for talking with me, both in the last podcast and in this podcast. I think the work that you're doing is really inspiring and really important. And I think it will genuinely shape the way, not just in Otago, but across New Zealand and hopefully worldwide, how people work with families, like in the future, in terms of having a parent with a chronic illness. I think, it's so important what you're doing. And I'm very, very happy that you're happy to share all your wonderful knowledge and things with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Katie. I'm always happy to talk about the subject.
Thanks, Tilly. You've been listening to MS Momentum, brought to you on the third Wednesday of the month by me, Katie Burns, Community Connector for MS Otago. You can listen again to this episode and find other podcasts from this series at oir.org.nz and on your favourite podcast platforms. To contact MS Otago, you can email info@msotago.org.nz or call us on 027 889 9035. Thanks for listening.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.